Now, I just arrived back in Nepal about 1 day ago. And our Ladrang people has been working very, very hard setting this place up. And we're going to do something very special tonight. So I thought I'd invite a few people over so it won't be too crowded. And what we're going to do tonight is this. In our Buddhist tradition, we have a special system of 5 preliminary practices. And the 5 preliminary practices are designed to transform our minds, change our minds, and by changing outer circumstances. So when we do the 5 preliminary practices correctly, and we do it very well, and we do it completely, we will see diseases heal. We will see if we're obstructed by spirits will be quelled or stopped. If we find that our mind is sleepy and dull and unalert, we find our mind become very, very, very alert, very, very sharp. If we have some depression, or if we have some unhappiness, or we have some kind of disturbances in our mind, we're not at peace, the 5 preliminary practices also help us to clear these kind of disturbances and give our mind some kind of peace. As we all know very clearly, we can pray to the Buddhas, we can pray to God, we can pray to the deities, and we can pray and pray and pray. But no matter how much we pray, if we don't change our minds, we won't be happy. If we don't change our perspectives, we won't be happy. So we can pray, we can do pujas, we can do rituals, we can do offerings, we can see lamas, we can see gurus, we can go to temples, we can do all of those things. But our minds won't become happy. Why? We've been brought up to think a certain way. We've been brought up to perceive things a certain way. We've been brought up to look at things a certain way. And so we're stuck looking at our relationships. We're stuck looking at our environment. We're stuck looking at our friends and our house and our living lifestyle in a certain way. So when we're stuck looking in a certain way, what happens is this. When we feel we can't do nothing about it, we become unhappy. When we're very young, and we just start out in business, or we start doing work, we feel very optimistic. We feel very enthusiastic. And we feel very bright. And then as the time goes on, our fixed way of looking at things, our fixed way of seeing things, our fixed way of accepting things or not accepting things slowly makes us become unhappy, bitter, maybe even angry. And so the anger builds up, the unhappiness builds up, and the sense of hopelessness builds up. And no matter how much good food we eat, or how much wonderful families we have, or how much pujas we do, or how much business we do, or how much wealth we collect, we still feel a sense of emptiness, unhappiness, and perhaps even senselessness. What's senselessness mean? What's the reason for all of this? We feel a sense of that. And the reason for that is because the way we look at things, the way we perceive things, the way we understand things, didn't generate happiness. The way we've been dealing with people, the way we've been looking at family, the way we've been doing business is not bad, but it didn't bring happiness. So therefore, as we get older and older, old doesn't mean you're old. Older means as you start doing things through wrong perception, wrong relationship, wrong attitude, our unhappiness becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. And you know, we don't know why. Why do I say this? Here, they're international people. Our faces are different, but inside we're all the same. Exactly the same. And that's not cliche, that's the truth. Because I meet international people, I meet hundreds and hundreds of people every year. And when I talk to them, it's the same thing all the time. So my point is, what is, if we feel this type of senselessness or unhappiness, and maybe we don't feel it at this time, but we come across many people who feel this, But no matter how many pujas we do, how many mantras we do, or how much business we do, or sometimes we just don't think about it, we try to keep ourselves busy, we still feel this kind of hopelessness, senselessness, and unhappiness. So, therefore, in Kathmandu, you see a lot of lamas. You see a lot of monks, you see a lot of Dharma teachers, you see a lot of temples. But we don't really know what's going on inside. We cannot look at the temples, we cannot look at the lamas, we cannot look at the pujas from the outside. If we simply just look at the lamas and we do the pujas from the outside, nothing on the inside changes. Pujas are important. Venerating deities, showing respect to Bhagavan is very important. But it will not make us happy. So what's important is this, is if we listen to the Dharma. The Dharma is very important if we listen to it. Whether we are Hindu, whether we're Buddhist, whether we are Christian, it doesn't matter. Dharma means correct conduct. Dharma means correct view. Dharma means correct attitude. And the cultivation of correct view and attitude, then our mind becomes very happy. So what happens is this, is Dharma is something that Buddha has spoken about. That when we think about it, it makes a lot of sense, it makes a lot of logic, it makes a light come on. And when we adapt it to our lives, and we put it towards our behavior, we start seeing other people react differently toward us. We see ourselves react differently toward others. And then we see the dynamics of people acting different towards us, we acting different towards them. And then you see things become lighter, happier, and better. You see, because our lives cannot be just eating, sleeping, working, making business, making money. It cannot be just that. Those are important. And we need to do that. But those are not the only reasons that we are here. So hence, if we study Dharma, you don't need to study as if you're a monk or a nun. If you study Dharma and you understand Dharma, your attitude and your mind will change. Now, in this room, everybody's educated. Everybody has gone to school. Everybody's educated. And most of us here are very exposed to the world. My point, if I simply do a puja, and I throw some flowers on you, and I put a little red tikka on your forehead, and say you're blessed, nothing happens to you. You see, because I don't have the power to bless you. I don't have any power to bless you. Nobody has the power to bless you. But we have the power to bless ourselves. What's a blessing? My type of Dharma is not simply doing pujas, and then doing some blessing, and then sending you off. My type of Dharma is different. I like to explain. I like to talk. I like to share, and I like to give you knowledge. I don't give you all the knowledge in one night, because it would be too much, but a little bit of knowledge each time we meet. So each time we meet, I like to give you knowledge. And the knowledge I give you is not to make you a Buddhist, not to make you a Hindu, not to make you a Christian, but my knowledge that I share with you is to help you become the person that will be happy, that will be satisfied. You're thinking, but if I have food, I'll be happy. If I have money, I'll be happy. Well, if that's the case, look at everybody who has money and food that you know. Are they happy? Or they're distraught? Or they're worried? In Kathmandu, if you have money, you have food, you're not happy, but you're comfortable. And one more. In Kathmandu, if we have electricity, we're very happy. That's an extra we need to add here. So if we have money and food and electricity, then we'll be much more happier. Much more. Oh, don't get me wrong. I love Nepal. I've been coming to Nepal for 20 years. My father has a house here. And I have one wonderful friends in Nepal. I love Nepal. And if I didn't love Nepal, I wouldn't establish a house here. Definitely not. I like it because it has everything I like, spirituality. So getting back to the point, what I don't like is to just do a lot of long rituals, give a lot of long initiations, give a lot of long rites and pujas, and then you say, oh, you've been blessed, because I will feel like maybe I'm not telling the truth. What I like to do with my friends and people is to share Dharma knowledge, to have them ask questions. then I answer them to the best of my abilities to share this knowledge. Why? Because when you have knowledge and you apply it, you see a transformation in your mind. And when your mind transforms, when your mind changes, when your mind becomes better, everything around you becomes better. Nobody in this room doesn't have problems, including me. Nobody in this room doesn't have unhappiness. Nobody. Whether you're a lama or whoever you are, it doesn't matter. Everybody has some unhappiness. Everybody has something that makes them not happy. And if we leave it there, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger with time. See, myself, I didn't choose to be a Dharma teacher. I was born in Taiwan. My father is Tibetan. I was born in Taiwan. Because when Tibet lost its country, my father immigrated to Taiwan. And so I was born in Taiwan. And at the age of 7, against my will, I was adopted over to the United States. Why do I say against my will? Because I didn't want to go. So at the age of about 17, 18, I met my root guru, His Holiness Kepcha Sonrinchi. This is the last picture on the right. It's my root guru I met. This is Sonrinchi. That's Sonrinchi's guru, Chujian Rinchi. Chujian Rinchi's guru is Pabongo Rinchi. So that's what we call a lineage guru. So my root guru, Sonrinchi, came to America to get teachings. I was very young. So I lived in a Dharma center in America, and I cooked there, and I cleaned there, and I worked on the outside, and I supported myself. So I lived there, and I received a lot of teachings from His Holiness Kepcha Sonrinchi. And he's one of the greatest lamas within the Tibetan tradition. Greatest. So in fact, he was already in his mid-70s at that time. So I learned quite a lot from him. But you have to understand, I was already interested. So at the feet of Kepcha Sonrinchi, I promised to become a monk. I promised to take ordination. And I promised to go to India to join the monastery there. And the monastery that I joined there is called Ganden Monastery. And Ganden Monastery currently has 3,000 monks. So I joined that monastery in January 1988. I arrived in India in October 1987. Then 1987, October, I arrived in India. From India, I went to Dharamsala. In Dharamsala, I met His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama. This is 20 years ago. And I received my monk vows from His Holiness directly. And then after I met His Holiness Dalai Lama, I went back to Delhi. From Delhi, I came to Nepal. I came to Nepal because I had to do some things. And I was in Nepal for about 1 month to 2 months. In December until January. That was the first time I ever came to Nepal, 1987. Very, very first time. And it's funny because a lot of the shopkeepers that I saw 20 years ago are still the same people. They're like him. Same people. That time, I didn't have any money to buy. I just come to your window, look, and I go bye-bye. I just leave. So now I still don't have enough money. Your price is very high. Just kidding. Just kidding. So I remember Pilgrim's Bookstore too. But I think that time you were a very small budgie running around and looking for toys. So anyways, I remember that time. I used to walk around in Tamil. And I stayed in a monastery in Boda, and I was having some neck pains. And so I met one of my teacher students, and this person took me back to Kathmandu guest house. That's the first time I ever went there, in 1987, December, and gave me a massage, because this person's a massage therapist, and gave me a wonderful massage to heal my neck, and I was very appreciative. So I remember going to Kathmandu guest house, and I thought to myself, that time, it was 20 years ago, what a nice hotel. Got a heater, got water. Because at the monastery, there's no heater, no water. Because we were washing outside in the wells. And so I said, oh, what a nice hotel. It's got a heater, and it's got water. It's so warm and comfortable. And I thought, wow. So I asked my friend, not my friend, but my teacher's student, oh, how much is it stay here? I can't remember. Something that time it was 10, 15, 20 US dollars. I can't remember. But she gave me some price. I thought, oh, well, I'll never be able ever to stay here. Ever. I thought to myself. So I didn't think, oh, no, I wasn't sad, nothing. Because I'm not interested in hotels all that. I said, oh, I'll never be able to stay here. And then now, 20 years later, I have always been staying there. In Kathmandu guest house. Because my students found a place and we stay there. And it was convenient. We go to Kathmandu guest house. Then we walk around to all the beautiful shops. And then we go to Pilgrim's Bookstore. So Pilgrim's is one of my favorite because I like books. I study, I like to read, and I like to share. So I like that. And in any case, it's funny that now we're all in one room. All the places I used to hang out. So I used to go to Buddha, walk around, circumambulate, see the shops. Very, very nice. In any case, that was my first trip to Kathmandu, and I said I'm going to be back again and again. And I have been. Always again. And I brought many, many, many people to Kathmandu already. Many, many people. Because there are so many powerful spiritual places. So I decided to have a home here. Because I would like to stay here more during the year. And I would like to bring more of my friends here to experience the spiritual places. Because there are many holy places. Many, many holy places. And if you know the meaning behind them, where they are, what to do there, it's even better. You don't go there just like a tourist and take a look. In any case, we have built a butter lamp house. What is a butter lamp house? A butter lamp house is a house that contains many butter lamps in order that you can complete one of your preliminary practices. And one of the preliminary practices is offering 100,000 butter lamps. 100,000. So of course we can't offer in one day. You can buy 300, 400, 1,000, and offer every single day without a break. So when you offer the butter lamp, there's a prayer to do, there's some meditation to do, and every day you prepare it and you will light it. So you do 100,000, and you'll focus on a particular Buddha. And the reason you do this is because in order for our minds to transform, or understand the Dharma, or learn the Dharma, in order for that to happen, we need to have knowledge. Hence, we either need books or a spiritual friend. A spiritual friend is translated as guru. A spiritual friend or guru, whatever you want to call it. So that spiritual friend should have knowledge. And that spiritual friend, he or she, conveys the Dharma to you. So when you learn the Dharma, you think about it. You learn the Dharma, you think about it. The second requirement you need is a collection of merit. So people get that mixed up. People say, oh, good karma and bad karma. And then they leave it as that. It's not as simple as that. Good karma and bad karma is one type. Then you also have merit. Merit is something different. Example, merit is something that you do without the selfish mind. It's something that you do without the selfish mind. Hence, when you do that action, merit is accrued. For example, if you offer a butter lamp to a Buddha, and you pray to the Buddha for money, long life, health, wealth, and happiness for yourself, when you offer to the Buddha, you collect karma, good karma. When you have a butter lamp and you pray that you can be someone of benefit to others, you can be someone that can bring happiness to others, you can be the cause of other people's lasting happiness, and you offer the butter lamp, that action becomes merit. Difference. The difference is, when you collect good karma, the karma is stored. When you collect good merits, the merit is stored. When you collect karma, once the karma remains dormant, it remains inactive until a situation comes that triggers it to open. So when a situation comes that it triggers it to open, you experience that karma. So what happens is, if you offer that to the Buddha and you wish for happiness and health or business, your business goes up, you get good health. But once you receive that benefit, then the karma is finished. It is extinguished. So hence, it's almost like wasting that action. Whereas if you offer a butter lamp to the Buddha and you pray for other people's happiness, other people's welfare, other people's benefit, and you truly mean it, and it's real, it's not something you just do for the moment, you really do it, and you offer it, you collect merit. So when that merit is triggered, what happens? You will become the cause of other people's happiness. Either you become someone that can be a benefit to them medically, physically, emotionally, financially, you'll be a benefit to others. And you will also get long life. and you will also have happiness. So happiness, long life, is a given. Is a given. So what happens is that that action, when triggered, is continuous. It doesn't finish. So in every single lifetime you are born, you will always receive the benefits of offering that bodhisattva. The difference, like this, if you have an amount of money, and you put that in the bank, that money, you don't touch the principal. You just live off the interest. Always you'll be safe. But if you touch the principal, and it runs out, you're finished. Karma is like touching the principal. Merit is like touching the interest alone. So hence, when we offer butter lamps, when we have a good motivation, butter lamps, when you light it, it dispels darkness. The darkness is gone. When we offer a butter lamp to the Buddha, any Buddha that we like, when we offer a butter lamp to the Buddha, what happens is, the Buddha doesn't have darkness. The Buddha does not have any ignorance or any stupidity, nothing. But when we offer to the Buddha doesn't need the butter lamp from us. The Buddha doesn't need our puja. The Buddha doesn't need anything from us. But when we offer the butter lamp to the Buddha, what happens? We create the causes for our own personal darkness to go away. Our personal darkness. What's our personal darkness? Anger. Why is anger a darkness? Because when we show anger, we're unhappy. Other people are unhappy. And then it continues. Many people can be killed because of anger. Darkness is what? Jealousy. Hatred. Miserliness. Stinginess. Tricking people. Those are our darknesses. Why are they called darknesses? Because those are qualities in us that make us unhappy short term and make other people unhappy long term. So hence those are called darknesses. By offering a butter lamp to the Buddha, the darkness does not go away. By offering a butter lamp to the Buddha, we collect merit. The merit that we collect is stored in our consciousness, in our mind stream. So that when we study the Dharma, when we contemplate on the Dharma, when we think about the Dharma, the information will go in. The information will go in, and our mind will change. So the purpose of making butter lamp offerings is for us to help transform our minds. Why? How many people do you know do a lot of pujas, do a lot of prayers, offer flowers in temples, but they're selfish, they're quite greedy, they don't change, they're quite angry. I'm not criticizing people. I'm not criticizing. But they themselves don't know that they are like that. They think that if they go to the temple and they make offerings of butter lamps or money or flowers, they think that all their sins are absolved and everything is fine. But if that's the case, then we can do negative things to people all day long and just go to temple daily to absolve our sins. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense at all. So my point is, what is offering butter lamps has a few benefits. One is the money we would have used for something negative, we can use for something positive. One. Number two, when we offer a butter lamp, it helps us to eradicate stinginess. Why? Because it's something we would use for something else for ourselves. So it's a small practice to eradicate stinginess. Second, when we offer a butter lamp to a Buddha, the Buddha, any Buddha, Vajrayogini, Tsongkhapa, Shakyamuni, Amitabha, Dada, any Buddha that we offer a butter lamp to, from their side, when we offer the butter lamp, we create a strong connection with them, we receive their blessing, and we collect merit. We make a connection. Why? In the future, when we meditate on them, our minds will transform. When we make a connection with them, we receive a blessing. The blessing we receive is what? What is a blessing? A blessing is when they touch our lives and we see our minds change. The people we're angry with, we forgive. The people that we want to hurt or get revenge with, we forgive. And you know what happens? You know what happens? The people that want to hurt us, their minds change also because of our attitude towards them. Everybody in life has enemies. The best way to stop an enemy is not to confront them and hurt them. The best way to practice to confront an enemy is through a lot of compassion. a lot of forgiveness. Forgiveness doesn't mean let them take advantage of you. No. You see, if you're walking down the street and someone robs you, next day you forgive them. It's done. But you don't go the next day waiting for other people to rob you again or walking down the same place in a stupid manner. You don't do that. Of course not. So when you offer a butter lamp, you create the causes of receiving a blessing so that whatever you have prayed for will come true. The third thing, when you offer a butter lamp to the Buddha, you create the karma of opening your mind to receive more dharma, more and more and more and more and more dharma. Why? The purpose of light is to dispel darkness. When you offer a light in front of the golden Buddha, in front of a Buddha, when you offer, it is symbolic of your darkness being lifted by the light of the offering you have made to a Buddha. So it's very, very important. All right? Therefore, today, they have constructed a butter lamp house, and we have purchased 1,100 butter lamps. So tonight, we're all going to do a little prayer. I thought, since we're going to meet, why don't we meet and do something positive and virtuous and nice together? So therefore, after we do this light prayer together, we're all going to walk to the butter lamp house in the back, and we're going to light 1,100 butter lamps. So what I want you to think is this. We're going to light it principally to the Buddha, Vajrayana. And we're going to light it that other people may be very happy. I'm going to light it for the people who have worked here very hard to have this arranged, this house, this lajang arranged. I'm going to light it for all my sponsors and patrons. I'm going to light it for my many, many students back in Malaysia and for our different departments that are growing. You can see on the website. So we're going to do that offering. The first set of butter lamps I'm going to do, 100,000. I'm going to do 100,000 is to dedicate for all the people that have helped me in my lives. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you all a butter lamp, and I want you to do the same. I want you to think about people who have been kind to you. I want you to think about people who have been gracious to you and who have helped you. And today we offer a butter lamp for them. So today's meeting will be short and sweet, and we'll offer butter lamps to the Almighty in order to receive their blessings. So what we do is we don't simply just light it, we're going to do a prayer. So I thought today I'll give you a light explanation of why we do butter lamps. So in our tradition, we have 100,000 butter lamps, 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 guru yoga, and 100,000 vajrasattva. We do those practices in the privacy of our own altars and shrines. We do that every single day in order to purify the negative karma that we have, that arose, and we do that to invoke the blessings. So therefore, it's much more than just going to temple and receiving some type of offering some flowers or putting some money there. In my system of dharma, I actually make us do the work. No one else can do the work. Why? Happiness is experienced in our own mind. Release from pressure is experienced in our own mind. And unhappiness is perceived or experienced in our own mind. So the only way we can do that is if we transform our own mind. Finish. So now what we do is, today I don't give you darshan. You will give yourselves darshan together with me. So we will invoke and do prayers together. After that, we'll go light 1,100 butter lamps. We will do this together tonight, and we will bless each other. You'll bless yourselves. Everybody has the power to bless. My type of dharma that I teach is not you go to someone to worship. You bless yourself at home. Alright? Everybody, please sit comfortably. This mantra is very famous in Tibet. It is the lineage of the Dalai Lama. It is called Mik Tse Ma. It's on the bottom. Five-line prayer to Lama Tsongkhapa. It's called Mik Tse Ma, short form. So the first line is Mik Me Tse Ve Te Ching Chen E Zik. The second line is Drime Ken Be Ombo Chang Bao. If you look at the translation right below, Avalokiteshvara, great gold mine of objectless compassion. Manjushri, master of stainless wisdom. Vajrapani, subduer of the entire gathering of Maras. Maras is evil spirits. At your feet, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the sages of the land of snow, I make request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. That is the meaning of the mantra you're reciting. So hence, Mikme Tsewe Teshin Chenizik is Omani Teme Hom. Drime Kenbe Ombo Jambayang is Om Arabasanadi. Dupo Mayu Jomsi Samveda is Om Vajrapani Hum. Combined, you are Tsongkhapa. So I bow my head to your feet, great master. Let me become just like you. May I gain compassion. May I gain wisdom. May I gain great confidence. So when you pray to Tsongkhapa, if you keep one statue of Tsongkhapa, all three bodhisattvas are included into one. Hence, in Tibet, the largest statues of Tsongkhapa, the largest statues of Buddhas are many, many Tsongkhapa statues all over. So like that, if we do this mantra every day, when we do this puja, when we receive the mantra, we just do it. One time. 21 times a day enough, if you have time more. If you want to dedicate for your beautiful mother, which you should, you want to dedicate for your beautiful father, or if you're worried about your children, or someone, or something, you can do this mantra and visualize them in Tsongkhapa's heart, and ask Tsongkhapa to bless them. Very, very powerful. We always think, how can we help people we love and care about? How? You can do it by Tsongkhapa. So you can visualize Lama Tsongkhapa like so. In his heart, surrounded by light and rainbows, is your mother and your father. And then you do the mantra, and you visualize Lama Tsongkhapa surrounding them with light and blessing and protecting them. Very powerful. So I'm sure everybody here loves their parents. One of the best ways to repay their kindness. And if sometimes some of us are feeling down, depressed, unhappy, this mantra, very powerful to cure it. Very, very powerful. Then, this mantra, when you do, Tsongkhapa, when you pray, all bodhisattvas are combined. All. So if you do one, you get three for free. Isn't that a good deal? So if you wish to do puja, just what we did just now, that's all. Why? You're busy. You have many things to do. So if you do this every day for 10, 15 minutes and just the mantra, no. You don't need to do a lot. Not at all. Just a little.
You can do it in English even.
Of course you do it in English. But the mantra, try to memorize in Tibetan. Why? Because the gurus originally recite in Tibetan. So it's very powerful. Tibetan is not a better language than Nepali. No. But because this mantra was especially recited in Tibetan. Everything else in English, that mantra you do in Tibetan. Even if your pronunciation is off and it sounds funny and different and people may laugh, Tsongkhapa will understand you. Tsongkhapa won't laugh at your funny, weird pronunciation. Repeat after me. One, Mingme. Tsewe. Delchin. Cherezik. Good. Second line. Dreame. Kenbe. Wangpo, Zhangpeiyang, Dufeng, Maoyu, Zhongzi, Sangweida, Gangqian, Kepe, Sukqian, Tsongkhapa, Lobsang, Chakpe, Shabla, so on that. Stayed in Nalanda Monastery in Varanasi over 1,000 years ago. And he was one of the greatest Indian Buddhist pundits alive. And he was very great because he traveled to Nepal and taught Dharma in Nepal. Then he went to Tibet and stayed in Tibet for 13 years and died in Tibet as one of the greatest living masters. So in Tibet, we worship this great guru. We respect this great guru from India. So this prayer is written by Adisha because Adisha from Varanasi taught us to offer Pada lamps to the Buddhas. So we're reciting the prayer that Lord Adisha actually composed for us. All right? So many of the prayers we have in Tibetan come from the great Indian and Nepalese masters. So translated into English, of course, is very, very beautiful. So you are not worshipping something Tibetan or doing something Tibetan. This is from your own wonderful, rich culture from the back. It's just no one explained to you. Okay? So let's recite the prayer by Lama Adisha or great Sri Adisha. Okay. offer these beautifully exalted, clear, and luminous lights to the thousands of Buddhas of the fortunate aeon, to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the infinite pure lands in the ten directions, to all the Gurus, Yidams, Dakinis, Dakas, Dharma protectors, and the assembly of the deities of the Mandalas. Due to this, may my father, mother, and all sentient beings in this life and all their future lives be able to see directly and actual pure lands of the complete and perfect Buddhas. May they unify with Buddha Amitabha, inseparable oneness. Please bless us that may our prayers be actualized as soon as possible due to the power of the truth of the three jewels and the assembly of deities of the three roots. Teyata Om Panchakriya Ava Padanai Soha 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 Teyata Om Panchakriya Ava Padanai Soha. The light transforms into a single brilliant five-colored wisdom. On the lotus and the moon disc, the syllables Om and D appear. From there, 108 beautiful goddesses of light, Mamema, appear wearing beautiful garments and precious garments. Every goddess holds a light in her hands, and from them emanate billions, trillions of infinite replicas of light offering goddesses. All of them make light offerings uninterruptedly to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, fields throughout all of space, and to the peaceful and wrathful deities.